You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.
Okay, guys, this is episode 6 of Interlock Gossip. We are back from our summer break. Unfortunately, Zartis the Emperor is not with us again because he is still unwell. To that end, welcome back to Interlock Gossip, the official statistician of the show, James Willis, my brother. Welcome back, bruv.
Good evening.
Yes. Of course, I'm Matt Willis, of course. I should have mentioned it from the top, but you probably know my name. James, thank you again for stepping back into Zarte's chair. Obviously, you said last time you wanted to be a one-off. Unfortunately, not to be the case on this occasion, but thanks for stepping up, bruv. Appreciate that.
It's a pleasure, as always. And as always, get well soon, Zarte.
Absolutely. Right. So, we have got 4 races to talk about in this episode. Starting with the Belgian Grand Prix. Now, as exciting as the race was, there's the elephant in the room to discuss first, isn't there? Which was the F2 race the day before. When Antoine Hubert passed away from his injuries, 23 years old. The first on-track fatality since 1994. The first fatality since Jules Bianchi in 2014. Probably a year later, but you know what I mean, guys. Very sad, but also made people think, well, is Formula One too safe? And it can be as safe as you want. Sometimes you just can't prepare for everything. The guy Correa, who was the guy who was in the crash with him, only came out of his coma last week. It was devastating. It really hit the sport hard. I don't know what to say about Hubert. I mean, the accolades are already substantial throughout the entire of the F1 community, and we obviously will add our thoughts to it. James, do you have anything to add to it, really?
Well, I did watch a few F2 races this year, and you know, he was a shining star. He was he looked like he was going to make the step up to Formula One in the next few years, and a shame, just such a tragic loss of such a talented driver. I don't think there's any more I can add to what's already been said. A true talent.
Indeed. Of course, everyone raced the next day in spite of it. Some people, as you said, kind of feels irrelevant, but same time, if they stop, then some people say Hubert's passing was pointless. So let's get on to talking about the action itself. Action at turn one was quite exciting with Max Verstappen and Kimi Räikkönen tripping over each other, as usual. Usually, because they do seem to fight over like magnets sometimes. And unlike magnets, they actually went into each other. Max probably shouldn't have gone in where he did, but he's always hungry, and if you know Max doesn't do that, then he's not being Max Verstappen. So he kind of crashed out at Radeon. Not at Rouge, at Radeon. that argument rages on about Randy Orton over Rouge, of course. Yeah, sad to see him go out so quickly, Max, but there's plenty more action to come from his sister Red Bull, of course.
Yeah, Albon, obviously his first race in the premier car, shall we say, of the Red Bull family. Yeah. Not the greatest qualifying, but he definitely showed the oomph behind that Red Bull. It's a shame that, like you say, that Max went out so early, because the pace that that Red Bull had could very well have been challenging near the top as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Albon, he looks like not like a different man. That maybe be a bit harsh to his drives at Toro Rosso, but he certainly looked on it. We also need to discuss the elephant in the room for Red Bull here, is that obviously F1 has these amazing titles they have to open with, obviously. How awkward was the moment, do you reckon, when they said to Pierre Gasly, we need to refilm it with you in the lower division car? I mean, obviously Albon won't mind, because he gets put in the Red Bull, so he obviously gets filmed in a shiny suit. And there's Gasly. To his credit, he did it, but it must have been a little bit humbling.
Yeah, I would see it as a bit of a kick in the teeth, really. But, I think Gasly had a fairly strong race. He got up to P9. And I thought it looked like the Gasly of last season. You know, he's put in decent performance.
Did you think that basically now he's not in the main team, he's allowed, the pressure off him, he can just race at last?
Yeah, I think there's not as much pressure on him. Now he's basically, it seems like he's been told just go out and race. Go out and enjoy yourself. As before, I think because Max was always so high, you know, such a big performer, and he would always perform so well, I think he probably put more pressure on himself to get to that level. I think by stepping into the Toro Rosso, is it one step back but two step forwards, maybe? I'm not sure.
Well, Albon certainly seems to have stepped up, which we'll get on to with the next few races, of course. But Gasly was involved in, I think David Croft said it, obviously it was 20 years, no, it was 19 years on from the infamous Hakkinen Schumacher Zonta moment.
Yes.
And Perez, Gasly and Raikkonen had a similar sort of thing happen, three abreast going into Les Combes. Beautiful bit of driving by all three drivers. No damage, no nothing like that. Great to see. On lap 19, though, the standing ovation around the circuit for Hubert as well. That was lovely to see. It was something so simple. Yeah. I don't know if it was arranged or if it was just done instinctively.
Probably a bit of both, I reckon.
But it was beautifully observed. And, doff my cap to everyone at Spa-Francorchamps.
Yeah, lovely.
Another about Albon. The pass around the outside of Daniel Ricciardo into no-name corner. You don't pass Ricciardo on the outside. You don't do it. And you've got to get up really early in the morning to pass Ricciardo around that side. And, well, clearly Albon had.
I think he showed his talent, you know. I mean, it's all right having the car, but you've got to have the talent to drive that car.
Which leads me to my next subject, of course, which is Charles Leclerc.
Another great pole position for him. He's at the start of this, he really started to show what it was made of.
Absolutely. Since the break, Ferrari have looked a different team. the power has not been an issue. We've known how powerful that Ferrari engine is all year long. And obviously, the long straights, obviously, it played massively to Leclerc and Vettel's advantage. But Leclerc went wheel to wheel with Hamilton and held him off. Would Hamilton have had a chance on the last lap? I don't know, because Giovinazzi had one hell of a heavy crash on the last lap. Brought the flags out. And I was saying, I think to Chris actually about it, because Chris isn't the biggest F1 fan, but he likes to stoke the fire with me when I try and like say Hamilton's the best driver because of the stats, yada yada yada. But anyway, I was like, I can see something bad happening in this race. I was just flashing back to 1994 all over again. And when Giovinazzi crashed, my heart just skipped a beat. And then you hear the radio saying he was fine. I was like,
yeah,
thank God for that. And Lando Norris. Lando Norris. Running fifth for the entire race. And then retired on the start-finish line.
Yeah.
On the last lap.
It's, yeah.
He was absolutely heartbroken. I subscribed to Lando Norris on YouTube. And I've seen some of his streaming and everything. He streamed, like, he did proper, like, sim racing online.
Okay.
And a week later, he was still smarting about it, and he races with Max Verstappen. You can hear him talking to each other. He's like, like Max, like, at least you got to the last lap. I didn't get past the third corner. I'm like, yeah. Well, that was Max trying to cheer him up a little bit, because he was still a bit down about it a week on.
Yeah.
Okay, so what else stood out to you, James, from Belgium?
I like the way that Vettel was playing very much team orders, especially in the first part of the race where we could see that he was not as fast as Leclerc quite early on, and the way he held them Mercedes back of Hamilton and Bottas before the pit stops, and that he showed a true team player attitude rather than being this number one driver that he always wants to be, sort of thing. It really helped Leclerc and Ferrari get the victory.
It was refreshing to see. Course, Leclerc didn't want to celebrate much, and I get that, because he was one of his best friends.
Yeah.
Who passed away late for. So, it was a bit of a somber end to the Belgian Grand Prix. So, nothing else I can think of off the top of my head from Belgium. If I'm missing something, guys, then I'm pretty sure someone will at Interlag Gossip, the new Twitter account, of course, if I've missed anything. So, with that being said, let's move to the Italian Grand Prix. James is waving his finger at me. He's caught me.
I've just got a stat for you.
Stat boy, of course. Go ahead.
Obviously, Leclerc winning his first race at Belgium, he joins the ranks of Michael Schumacher and Jim Clark in winning their first ever races in Belgium as well.
The two of the greatest drivers of all time. I won't say which one is better, but people know it's Jim Clark. Right, so we move on. Great company. We move on to Monza then, James, shall we?
Monza.
Now, Monza is a weird one. But this one's got a lot of action in it. We'll get through. But we also need to, first of all, talk about Formula 3, James.
Yeah. And the Parabolica.
Yeah.
I completely forgot about that.
Do you know but what? Yes. It wasn't even on my notes. It wasn't until I was thinking about incidents, talking about Belgium. I was like, nothing bad can happen at 2 weeks in a row. And then the somersault into the catch fence when he just caught that sausage curb at the wrong point. Because it was put out there a few years ago so people wouldn't run wide and do that. And then this happened. Ironic thing is, and this is a message out there to everyone who ever said the Halo is not necessary. Saved his life. Saved his life.
Well, completely. Completely. And that's why it was added. And we saw that last year as well, didn't we?
Leclerc in Belgium, yeah.
Leclerc, that's it, yeah. Saved his life.
Absolutely.
It's a very necessary piece of equipment.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't even notice the Halo anymore. And it's the fact I don't. And the fact there's so many teams incorporate it now into things. I mean, they put certain colours on it. When Niki Lauda passed away, they coloured it red for Lauda, sort of like a little hat for him sort of thing. And they actually use it quite cleverly on the overhead shot as well, to it, like the speedo and everything.
Yeah, the graphics like that as well, yeah.
Really clever how they incorporate it so you don't notice it anymore. So, but the FIA obviously went out there and removed the switch curve before qualifying, which was interesting.
A lot of it boiled down to obviously Raikkonen red flag in Q3. With his heavy smash. And then it was, I can't really describe it.
Well, I'll give it a go. Basically, if people who didn't see it, the Monza is such a fast circuit that the tow you get from the car in front is immense. So no one wanted to go first. So everyone kept hovering. And I still love listening to Martin Brundle and David Croft saying, they're not going to get round in time. And in the end, only two drivers did. And one of them was Charles Leclerc, who got pole position. In fact, he didn't improve in his time, but he got round.
He didn't try. Halfway round, he realised he didn't have to, so he didn't.
No. Another guy was Carlos Sainz, who I think did improve. But everyone else, it was an absolute farce.
Well, they were all just waiting, weren't they, for everybody to go out. And then as soon as one bolted, they all went. And it really shocks me that no one went out earlier, because they left the garage with 90 seconds left on the clock. Yeah. And I can't remember what the pole time was this year. Probably like 127 or something like that.
It's very close to it, yeah. Even at lap record speed have been difficult.
Well, this is it. I mean, they came into the final
sector.
I remember Mike Brundle saying something like, for example, it's a 23-second sector and there's 22 seconds left on the clock. And it's like, wow, well, you lot have just
embarrassed
yourself. A lot of money here.
You've embarrassed yourselves. You've got to say, is that the driver's fault? Is that the strategist's fault? A lot of people you can blame for this one, but at the end of the day, it was embarrassing.
I think it was a bit of everyone, really, because I think they were driving so slow that it was quite dangerous for the drivers behind. You could also blame the strategists because they're like, no, we want the tow, so we don't want to go out first. A bit of everything, really, I believe. You can't pin the blame on just one thing. But Carlos Sainz had a chance.
Took it. And he took it.
Yeah.
Right, so with that all in mind, let's talk about the race. Where do you want to start, James? Because I've got a funny feeling it's not going to be showering praise on a certain German.
Yes. Seb.
Four-time world champion, Sebastian Vettel. He's won four championships, guys. He's been in F1 since 2007.
He's worked through the ranks. You know, he's drove for many a team. He started off at the bottom. He put the car on pole here in a Toro Rosso, which no one expected at all at the time. Let's be honest. We knew it was a decent car, but what he did with that car was just, he really showed his talent.
I cried that day when he won that race, James, remember? Because I was a Minardi fan, and that was Minardi in another coat of paint. That's all it was.
Yeah, I totally agree. And then stupidity. Is that put it politely? I don't know.
It was an amateur mistake for one thing. He lost it on his own in the Ascari chicane. But then to rejoin the track without checking and punting Stroll off.
Yeah.
I mean, Stroll then did the same thing and punted off Gasly, of course. But to be fair, Stroll was penalised with a time penalty. Vettel was lucky to get away with a 10-second stop go.
You say that. I did actually research this earlier. He has now actually got 3 points on his licence.
No, he has 9 points on his licence now.
He gained an extra 3, which I thought was... Which I thought was good. You know, I thought that was a correct punishment.
Yeah. The other thing, before this race, of course, is that they also reinstated the black and white flag. Because they wanted to encourage fierce racing, but we won't let a few things go.
Well, I think the black and white flag is very much summed up in the commentaries. It's basically the yellow card of Formula One.
It is,
and it should be used. I don't understand it. Why it was taken away?
It was just sort of discontinued because. We've got penalties and things now. We don't really need it. But I think it helps to encourage it because you can make a mistake as a genuine mistake sometimes.
Yeah. And I believe it is a very useful tool for stewards because it's like, hang on a minute. Right, we'll let you have that one, but you do not do it again. But, you know, it's a really good thing to have.
And we had the first example of that with Leclerc.
Yes, indeed.
I think it was lap. It was in the lap 23. I think it was.
Was that halfway, wasn't it? Yeah.
Where Hamilton was wheel to wheel with Leclerc, and Leclerc didn't leave him a card with. He didn't. And Hamilton went off the track and had to rejoin from his escape road and everything. He was given the black and white flag correctly. To be fair, He was correctly given so. But then he skipped the chicane at turn one. And wasn't penalised for it.
No.
We've had it confirmed now. The black and white flag is not one for each offence. It's regardless.
Okay.
So if you get black and white flag once, you don't get another one, you just get black flag.
So it doesn't matter what it's for. It's just, for example, like in football.
Exactly.
You've had your caution. Okay.
Yeah. But...
And
he, to be fair, Leclerc made a few mistakes. He was a bit scrappy at times, but he had his elbows out and was fighting. And we want to see more of that from young drivers. We want to see more of that coming through. Definitely.
Great racing, a classic track, a proper dogfight, I thought.
Mm.
And you don't get much of that nowadays because, you know, when you've got one team which is dominating like a certain race, it's normally... See you later, just your teammate behind, and they won't fight each other because they think, oh, let's keep them on the point, get the points for the championship as a higher. It was classic wheel-to-wheel racing, which we haven't seen a lot this season.
We've seen much more of it. Ever since France, we've been treated to a good race after good race after good race in one way or another. Hamilton, of course, made a mistake then at turn one, locked up on his worn tyres, and Bottas got past him, which... made me smile a little bit. Hamilton, of course, then pitted to try and get the fast lap. I don't think he did he, James? You got a stat, huh?
Yes, he did get the fast lap in his race, yeah.
He did?
Yeah, then with those new tests. Because he had nothing to lose, he had to do it.
That's a fair enough thing to do, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then, you know, he closed the gap down and... Maybe after, if there was a few more laps at the end of the race, he may have got close to Leclerc, but he wasn't quite close enough, was he?
No, he wasn't quite. Looking through here, Albon, again making daring moves. Granted, they didn't quite come off in this race, but he still showed he wanted to make moves and get out there, and I'm pleased with that.
Yeah, a solid performance, finished sixth. You know, he's definitely showing his talent.
Yeah, and that's despite the fact that he was sent careering off the track when he was trying to get past the McLaren. But he, but you know, he fought hard. Max, of course, came up from back as well. Finished eighth, I believe.
Yeah, Max finished eighth in the end.
That wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
Vettel, after all the trial tribulations, finished down in 13th place. Which I think if you bring home a Ferrari 13th at Monza, people are going to like you. Thankfully, his budget was spurred on this day by the most popular win at Monza in 10 years, which was...
popular win at Monza, probably one of the most popular wins ever.
Yeah, because if you win in a Ferrari, you reach God status. If you win at Monza in a Ferrari, where does that put you?
The scenes at the end of the race were just... mental. Completely stunning. I've never seen anything like it. And I've seen Ferraris win at Monza before, but the atmosphere...
It had been so long.
It was just on another level. I've never seen anything like it before.
It had been 9 years, and Ferrari hadn't won a race since America last year, before Belgium. They weren't expected to do well this after the break, and they came back with a vengeance, and it was a beautiful thing to see. It was lovely to see a fight resume. I've no love lost for Ferrari. Mum keeps telling me all the time, I knew you love Ferraris, really, Matthew. No. No. I just like seeing good, clean racing. Anything else that stood out from this race, Jay?
Giovinazzi, great result for him, finishing ninth, his best ever finish. I thought he had a decent race. And the Renaults, first double top five finish for 11 years, 210 races.
That's scary.
You know, Ricciardo and Hülkenberg, decent qualifying and a decent race. You know, finally starting to do something. You know, I mean, they've had a very, like we said on the previous show, they've had a very up and down season. They're showing a little bit more consistency now, which I thought was really good.
Absolutely. Speaking about Giovinazzi doing really well, that actually is a nice way to tee up ready for Singapore. Before we do, though, Haas. The Haas Rich Energy thing, they finally came to a head, and Haas and Rich Energy are no longer partners, of course. Of course, we still have yet to see Rich Energy actually as a product on the shelves. I've never seen the damn thing. I like an energy drink, I can't find it anywhere. And if I can't find it...
I work in a well-known supermarket and we don't stock it.
And you stock all of them.
Well, is it?
Exactly. So, and they've just started sponsoring West Ham United ladies team, apparently.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. So, not sure what to make of that one. Right. So, yeah. Haas are now free of that sort of thing. And, you know, all the best to everyone on that side of thing going forward. Right. Shall we move to Singapore?
Let's do it.
Right, this race was interesting.
Different, wasn't it? Very, very different. I was expecting it to rain, and it didn't.
That's not a bad thing, James. You don't always need wet races to make races always exciting.
It was a very slow race.
Yeah, a slow burn to it, definitely. Yeah. But when I give you the following sentence, this will sum it up perfectly. Giovinazzi first, Lance Stroll second.
This was very much tyre management at its peak, I believe.
Yeah.
When the front runners were leading the race at first, I think I remember seeing something online. Excuse me, they was lapping at 15 seconds slower than the pole time. Now, I know race speed is normally 5 or 6 seconds slower than pole time, but 15, that showed very well how much they were they weren't going full speed. And that midfield of, who was it, Giovinazzi, Norris, Ricardo, Sainz, I can't remember them exactly. But, you know, they didn't pull away from them at all.
No, and that therefore, when they pulled the pit stop, it was inevitable they were going to end up dropping back into the grasps. Now, Leclerc was not happy that Vettel was pitted first.
No, and that ultimately led to the race result.
It did. And someone who was even more angry was Hamilton, because they had no choice but to leave him out.
Well, this is it, and it played so much into Ferrari's hands. And Red Bull with Max, of course. But yeah, you know, Hamilton starting second, and he finished fourth. Another miscalculation by Mercedes. Yeah, which we've seen quite a few this year.
We have had a few this year, which is unusual for them. But yeah, to see an Alfa Romeo leading a race, that's the first time they've led a Grand Prix in decades.
36 years.
Yeah.
Andrea Serious.
Yes.
1983.
Yes, that's a name from the past. He was Michael Schumacher's teammate in 1901, James.
Indeed. In the draw.
Indeed, at Belgium. But it was also the first time someone other than Ferrari, Red Bull, or Mercedes has led a Grand Prix in the turbo hybrid era.
Yeah. And do you know who the last person was?
Last one? You're going to help me out in this one, James. I've actually forgotten.
It was Valtteri Bottas.
In the Williams. In
the Williams.
That's 4 years ago. That's a long time. That's such a long time ago. That is scary.
But that just showed you what kind of race it was. Mm. At one point, I thought we was going to hit the 2 hour time limit.
Well, we did hit a 2 hour time limit. Thankfully, we got the last lap in time.
Oh, well, yeah. Which is, you know, it's unheard of normally.
I didn't like the team orders from Ferrari, though, because once Leclerc and Vettel were through first and second, he was told to hold station, basically.
Yeah.
Whilst I get that, especially in the race of attrition, I'm not happy hearing that.
No.
But, you know, nor should anyone be happy hearing that.
Mm, totally agree. It was just, for me, it wasn't one of the best races of the year. It was very slow, like I said. And the front runners made their way back through that midfield battle.
Greatest of overtaking.
Oh, totally. And it was
because it was for position. It wasn't being blue flagged, nothing. So they were actually racing each other. So you got to see overtakes, and I'm like, more of this, please.
One last thing which I've got written down here is obviously Kevin Magnussen with his fastest lap. When was the last time you saw someone finishing in last getting a fastest lap at a race?
Been a while.
Indeed. And of course, he doesn't get the extra point, unfortunately. But yeah. He's only ever held two fastest laps, both in Singapore.
Indeed. That's a fact that you love to point out to me every week, James. Yep. I was like, that's why you're my statistician, James. little note, George Russell retiring, his first retirement in F1, because Grosjean drove into him.
Yeah, it wasn't his fault.
Grosjean didn't get a bigger penalty than he did is beyond me.
No, but because he was so far ahead, he didn't actually lose a place. So, God, I've seen it, so. I have nothing more to add on Singapore.
I do. Danny Kvyat, Russian torpedo, back in action again. Taking out.
Oh, yes, I remember this, yeah.
Taking out Raikkonen at turn one.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. I must admit, with all the incidents around the track and everything, the amount of safety cars required at times, credit to the Singapore Marshals for how quickly they and efficiently they worked to get that track cleared every single time. Take note, Azerbaijan.
Yeah.
Okay. So, that being said, let's move to the Grand Prix with the weirdest... Well, you guys are here. It's time to go to Russia. Sochi.
Now, I didn't actually watch this race. I've only seen the highlights online. So, go for it. Leclerc, four times in a row pole position.
Yes. He was immense in qualifying, and I mean immense again. He is clearly a star of the future. There is no one doubting that now. People are saying he made a move too soon. I think at this point, two race wins already, multiple podiums, multiple pole positions, he knows exactly what he's doing. He
consistently as well.
He's consistently outperforming a four-time world champion. So that's always a good thing. Ferrari's team decisions. I actually have no problem with them in this race.
Okay.
Ferrari were right to do what they did. In terms of Leclerc punched a hole for Vettel to get the slipstream and get past Hamilton, and Vettel would end up passing Leclerc in turn one, and then they were going to swap back. Everyone knows that was what was asked to do because they told him to hand the place back to Leclerc.
Yeah.
You can even hear him saying, Seb will let you buy next lap.
And what do you feel about what Seb did? Can you see where he was coming from?
No, I can't see where he's coming from, James. I can't see where he's coming from. All year long, Vettel has had Leclerc playing second field to him, even though Leclerc has been faster.
Yeah.
Melbourne, prime example. And Spain, Hungary, places where he's been faster than Vettel, and they've not let him past. Seb was not faster. Because if he was, he'd been pulling away. But he wasn't pulling away.
But Seb was 3 seconds ahead of Leclerc at one point, wasn't he?
He was because he then gunned it. And then because Ferrari changed the strategy, so Vettel would have ended up behind him.
Okay.
And they changed, and in Venice, it worked nicely. The Ferrari had to change the strategy to make the plan work. And in fact, it worked an absolute treat.
Yeah, it did.
Until the next lap, after his pit stop. Vettel retires. Out comes the virtual safety car.
An MGUK, it's not something you expect to go, is it?
Not a Ferrari, no. And, of course, when you do that, you lose 10 seconds less in a pit stop.
Mm.
And that put both Mercedes out in front of Leclerc.
To be fair, seize an opportunity by Mercedes. Brilliant.
Oh, I don't blame Mercedes in the slightest. I just find it really ironic. And there's nothing malicious about it when people say, like, oh, it's conspiracy this, conspiracy that. It's not. It's just really ironic that a Ferrari retirement cost the other Ferrari the victory. And there's no question Leclerc would have won that race if it hadn't been for that.
Mm. Well, you could see he had the fastest car still towards the end, from what I saw. Yeah.
Bottas was immense, though. Bottas is defending with immense. His first win came at this track 2 years ago.
He's got his talent. He's a very talented man.
Yeah, so he knows how, and he defended from Vettel that day, and he parked that Mercedes everywhere. He did a great job, and he's already been told publicly that he is the rear gunner for Hamilton. Re-signed for next year, of course. Ocon's going to Renault. I don't know. Would you be happy signing up to be a number two driver, James?
At first, I'd probably say yes, but after I've been there for so long, I'd be like, hang on a minute, guys. Look, this man is just about to win his sixth world championship. You know, what happened with Rosberg, you know? I'd be like saying, come on, guys, give me a chance.
But at the same time, Mercedes don't want another situation with Hamilton and Rosberg.
No.
They want one man to win, and they want one man to finish second. Which is fine under certain circumstances, but
is it like a footballer who's on loads of money just to sit on the bench, but he's like, hang on a minute, I actually want to go and play football, sort of thing. You know, he wants to.
It's a good argument.
He wants to compete, sort of thing.
It is a valid argument and a good argument, James. I won't argue that at all. Mainly because I can't.
Aha! Caught you something.
Indeed. Indeed.
Mm.
But. what else stands out from this? Seeing George Russell crash out of another race.
Do you know what? I think it was just as well he was going so slow, because that could have been nasty.
Yeah, it's a brake failure, plain and simple.
That looked very similar to Schumacher at Silverstone. You know, he could have quite easily broke his legs there. Just as well that he was going slow around them corners.
Because I know how far you can take those corners out, having played F1 2019, of course. And it's fast. I have to admit, I do not have a great deal down for this race, because most of the excitement was at the front.
I have nothing else, really, other than Kimi. Jumpstart.
Yes, you don't expect that from a former world champion.
You know, I think that's one of the first jump starts I've seen all season, to be fair. You don't see many of them anymore, do you?
Well, no, because you've got the beautiful sound effect now, whenever a race starts, of course, you get the sound with the light, of course, now.
Mm.
It's very difficult to make that mistake.
Mm. To be fair, though, I thought they did hold him for a long time on the line this time.
They did.
Compared to, it might have been Singapore, where the lights went out.
Almost instantly, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I thought in Sochi that they held him for a long time. So I can see why he jumped it, to be fair.
But just so it was knowing, James is not condoning him beating either, though, so that's fine.
No.
I'm just trying to, like, see if there's anything, I've missed, James. It wasn't the most exciting race in the world.
No, to be fair, the highlights on the YouTube channel didn't really show much at all, really. It showed Verstappen with a couple of good moves. But yeah, a couple of points for Haas, which makes a change. Ken Magnussen finishing ninth, which is a minor miracle for Haas at the moment, let's be honest, the way they're performing. But yeah, otherwise, solid performance by Red Bull. McLaren again, performing well, as you'd expect. Yeah, I haven't really got much more to add to that, really.
Alex Albon, another solid drive.
Finished
fifth, I believe.
He did, again, another solid drive. You know, he's showing what he should be doing in that Red Bull.
Between him and Gasly.
Yeah, I mean, I think Gasly's performances have got better since he's gone back to Toro Rosso, to be fair. So it could be interesting what happens in the contract situation.
Yes. Although it must be said, Albon, although Gasly's performances have got better, Albon's have started shining.
I have to agree with you there. I think he's definitely showing his true potential.
Yes. And that's what we like to see. We like to see the drivers stepping forward. We've said it a few times through this episode. Leclerc, among others, Albon, the future's bright for the sport. George Russell, obviously the Mercedes Academy driver. He's on loan from Mercedes at Williams. There's a lot of exciting things for the future of Formula One, and I can't wait to see what else we see.
Give it 18 months and we'll see a whole different kettle of fish when these new things come in.
Absolutely. Which is the perfect way, actually, James, to wrap up this show, is to talk about the latest little bits of news, of course. Big one, of course, being there is a new engine supplier for McLaren.
Okay, I don't know if I know this.
From 2021, McLaren will be powered by Mercedes again.
Oh, yes. Yes, I have heard that, so yes.
Which is fantastic news for McLaren. I've got to say I'm surprised to see they're going back to them, because they were dropped like a bad habit when they bought their own team, of course. And then when they were changing from Honda, Mercedes refused to just supply them. So I'm like, well, you know, what else can you do, sort of thing. But, you know, they're back in business together from 2021, so we'll see what the new engines can deliver. Of course, knowing McLaren, the new engines will be rubbish.
Yeah, more than likely. You know, you never know with McLaren, do you? They get a new engine and you saw what the Honda engine did to them. And then
look in the Red Bull.
They're sticking the Red Bull when it's winning races, so it's like, well, crazy.
Absolutely. Other little things. Yamamoto is making his debut for Toro Rosso this coming weekend.
Mm-hmm.
In Suzuka, of course, the first Japanese driver for a long time. Since Kimuri Kobayashi, I do believe. So it's nice to see another Japanese driver back. And of course, at Japanese Grand Prix, no less. And former teammate of Jensen Button in the Japanese Formula Nippon. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, so he's got his credentials, that's for certain. And he would keep Jensen Button honest. So Jensen, one of the smoothest drivers you ever saw in F1. So a very, very much looking forward to see what he can do. Obviously, Japanese Grand Prix is this weekend, James. Threat from a typhoon in the area. Seems to be a regular thing in recent years gone by.
Yeah. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago qualifying being moved to a Sunday because of a typhoon, wasn't it?
Yes. Which is slightly terrifying. Of course, there's also the Rugby World Cup out there at the moment, of course. And that's likely to be in the firing line. The Scottish fan has said, it's just like Scotland, bring it on. but that's not, hopefully won't affect the Grand Prix too much if that is the case. I have looked ahead for weather forecast. It is meant to be raining all weekend at Suzuka. Now, if that is the case, we'll see what happens. Gonna be interesting if that does happen.
I mean, we've seen wet Japanese Grand Prix before, and it's really shaken out before.
Yeah,
not so much as Fuji. No.
But not as dramatic.
Whoever decides to build a racetrack at the bottom of a mountain is an idiot.
You said that at the time, and that was not as tragically in 2014. Hopefully, as well.
Well, let's hope not.
I was actually quite disturbed because there was a YouTube channel, I think it's been taken down now, called F1 Replays, which would post full races in their entirety. And the last one they put up recently was 2014 Japanese Grand Prix, and I was like, no.
I'm not watching that, no.
No. No, I made the mistake of, well, not a mistake, because I watched the race live and saw it happen. And at the time, I wasn't happy. But Sky refused to show the highlights or anything until they knew what was happening with Bianchi at the time. Not sure if it would be... I think it was BBC. Showed the highlights. Didn't care. You can delay that till late in the day.
Yeah.
They didn't. Obviously, they wouldn't know that he was going to pass away a year later. I get that, but you know, you wait a little bit of time. But anyway, let's hope we haven't got to talk about that ever again.
No.
Right. So obviously, the next race is obviously up by Japan, obviously, and then I believe it's Mexico and America. Not in that order, of course.
It goes to the Americas. It goes to Mexico first, and then Austin, and then
Brazil. Oh, it is Mexico first. Now this year, is it? I thought we used to follow America. Never mind. I was right the first time. Good. Okay, so we're going to do those three races next. It's amazing. We're racing towards the end of the season. It's fantastic. Okay, so thank you again, James, for stepping in for Zarte this episode. I know he's dying to get back, but I dare say that we will speak to you soon, James.
Indeed, we'll speak again soon. Hopefully, Zarte will be able to come back. And again, my best wishes to him.
Absolutely. Best wishes to you, Zarte. From Matt and James Willis, we're out of here. This podcast is a Matt Attack production for the Visionaries Wrestling Network.